Good morning, everyone. All right, that's better. So my name is Brian Keller. How many people were in my lap-around ALM session yesterday? Okay, great. Thanks for coming back, and good to see some new faces as well. This is software testing with Microsoft Test Manager 11 and Lab Management 11. I think in some places in the agenda, it talks about exploratory testing. We're definitely covering exploratory testing in here, but it's a bit broader than that as well. This is the first week that I've been delivering this session. I delivered it once in Belgium, and it's already my favorite session to deliver just because there's so many great things that we're doing in this space that that I'm really passionate about, and I hope that you'll get excited as well. We are very closely getting ready to ship the beta of Visual Studio 11 and Team Foundation Server 11. And it's a bit unfortunate. I was hoping to be able to show you the beta this week, so I hope you'll bear with me. I have a mixture of a variety of different builds in here just to get everything working on the pre-beta bits. So I've got about four or five different virtual machines. So if things go well, somebody can buy me a beer. And if things don't go well, somebody can buy me a beer. So we'll see. We'll get through this as best we can. Quick show of hands, how many people are familiar with Microsoft Test Manager 2010? Okay, good number of you. I am going to be covering a few of the Microsoft Test Manager 2010 concepts just to make sure that everyone's aware of what it can do. And then we'll also be talking about Microsoft Test Manager 11 and Lab Management 11 for the rest of the session. So for those of you that are already familiar with 2010, just hang out with us while we get through some of these core concepts. And then I promise you'll see some new stuff today. So as I said yesterday, I work at Microsoft Building 24. If you're ever on campus, stop on by. I worked on Visual Studio for the last 10 years or so, way before we even had an application lifecycle management strategy. So it's really exciting for me to see how we've kind of grown Visual Studio from being a great tool for programmers to being a great tool for the entire team. And as you saw yesterday, for those folks that came to my talk, even beyond the development team as well. So your stakeholders and your DevOps teams and people like that can now participate in the application lifecycle. I'm on Channel 9. I put all my content on my blog. So this presentation and the presentations from Belgium, I'll post to my blog sometime when I get back to Redmond. The virtual machines that I use for my demonstrations are all available on my blog, along with hands-on labs and demo scripts, so that if you wanted to redeliver this to your company, you can. I have one already for Visual Studio 11 that is based on the developer preview. And as soon as I get back to Redmond, actually this weekend, I'm going to be finishing off the beta virtual machine so that I can get ready to ship that shortly after the beta ships. But the URL will remain the same, so if you just go there, you'll get the latest and greatest. The engineering team for lab management also wrote a supplemental blog post that describes exactly how to take my developer preview virtual machine and add the lab management capabilities to it. So if you wanted to go back and kind of set up your first lab management rig with Visual Studio 11, this is an easy way to do that. And I'll be updating this for the beta content as well. Getting too far away from my clicker here. I've written a couple of books. I just have these resources in the slide in case you want them. So today we're going to be talking about manual testing, and I hope that even if you're a programmer out there and you say, I don't do any manual testing, I'm going to show you why you should maybe care about what tools your manual testers are using. So stick with me there. And then lab management is really a capability that applies both to manual testers and to people that are writing maybe test automation code or even just developing software as well, because I'll show you how easy it is now to set up an entire build, deploy, test workflow, and that can give you a set of environments that allow you to test your software in a variety of other configurations that may differ from what you're actually running on your desktop or may more closely resemble what you're running in production. So it's a really great way to surface a lot of issues that you may not otherwise discover. And then if we have time, we'll talk about tracking quality as well. So I always like to start by talking about some of the reasons that we're in software quality. I've showed these slides before, but this is the USS Yorktown. Is one of the first of what the U.S. Navy called their smart ships. And you know, anytime you name something a smart ship, you're just doomed to have some sort of problem go wrong. And sure enough, as soon as a crew member entered a zero into a data entry field, it caused a divide by zero error that it completely shut down the ship. They were dead in the water for something like 3 hours. And so I don't want to be the Navy crewman who had to explain that you just shut down the ship. I really don't want to be the person that was responsible for testing that. That's kind of embarrassing. The Ariane 5, this is the European space program, they basically reused a bunch of code from the Ariane 4, but they neglected to realize they were taking a different flight path, which wasn't tested for with that code, and basically blew up the whole shuttle and cost $370 million in 1996 prices, so probably more than $500 million now. If you like these kinds of examples, there was a great talk a few years ago called An Illustrated History of Failure that was at OSCON. And one of the interesting things that he does is he tries to calculate the value of a human being's net output throughout the entire lifetime. And he divides it into the GDP to try to figure out how much we all contribute to society. And it's something like $2 million in the lifetime for an average person. But due to the magic of software, it's possible with a single line of code to eradicate all of the value that you add to society and all of the value that hundreds or thousands of your peers add to society. So that's the magic of software for you. My goal with doing these presentations is to make sure that none of us appear in a future example like this. And finally, the F-22 Raptor. So the first time they were flying from Hawaii to Japan, they crossed the international dateline, and it shut down all the computer systems because they just didn't think to test for that, right? And so luckily, they were able to fly back to Hawaii, so nobody got hurt in these examples, although they did cost a lot of money. Well, of course, I work at Microsoft, and, you know, I would be, you know, remorseful if I didn't actually show you some of our mistakes. We have, I don't know how to shut that down, but that's from the C# 2005 setup, which I worked on. Here's another one that this file is still copying, something like 3 years later. Well, I'm sure we've all seen this one before. This is fixed in Windows 8. It's much better now. An error has occurred while displaying the error that has occurred while creating an error report. Of course, the problem is it's missing a period at the end. Otherwise, that should be fine. And just, okay. Nothing else to say about that. So what do we do about this problem? Well, I in my spare time, do a lot of rock climbing and glacier climbing. And so I kind of think about the time that I spend in the gym, where I'm in a safe environment, as my ability to test myself and to test my gear. And if I have something go wrong in the gym, maybe I jam my finger, I might be out of the gym for a week or so, but the cost of failure is very, very low. Whereas if I'm out in the wilderness and maybe, you know, 24 or 48 hours away from getting help, the cost of failure can be quite high. And so here I'm on the top of my first glacier and really excited about that, except here comes this hailstorm in the background, and we got hit by something like a 60-mile-an-hour hailstorm my very first climb. And that's when you're really glad and thankful that you've tested your team and yourself and your gear to make sure that the cost of failure doesn't bite you. And software development is the same thing, right? We've all been there. We find a bug within a couple of minutes of writing some code, no big deal. We know what we just changed. We go back, we back out the fix or back out the change and make the fix, very low cost. But by the time you ship that to your customer and all of a sudden planes are falling out of the sky and rocket ships are blowing up and, you know, whatever line of work you're in, I'm sure you have your own examples, the cost of failure can be much, much higher. And so sometimes 10 or 100 or 1,000 times more expensive once you release it. So that's why we're passionate about trying to drive that quality upstream. And to do that, we want to make sure that QA is tightly aligned with the development organization, because we're all in this together. And so to that end, leading up to the 2010 release, we kind of took a look at the entire testing market. And at the far left end of the spectrum, you have manual testing. And as you go from left to right, you move from a manual testing world over into a fully automated testing world. And as it turns out, about 70% of the testing that takes place is still taking place in the manual testing world. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that oftentimes it can be hard to test everything you need to test with automated code. Another thing that can change is that as the software evolves over time, those automated tests might break. And then, of course, having a human being sitting in front of a machine can actually detect a lot more problems oftentimes than an automated test can. So we think that the lion's share of testing is at least for the next 10 or 15 years, destined to remain on this left side of the equation. The problem with that is over the last 10 or 15 years, the majority of the advancements in testing tools have really focused on the right end of the spectrum. And that's not to say that that's not important, but we're kind of leaving the manual testers out of benefiting. And so for the 2010 release, we really wanted to come out with a tool that was focused on helping those manual testers to be productive and to integrate with the rest of the life cycle. And when we talk about integrating with the rest of the life cycle, you can think back to the last time a tester brought you a bug, or maybe you are a tester and you brought a developer a bug, and you look at them for a couple minutes and you say, you know what? Works on my machine, right? We've all been there. And so the reality is that the tester finally or probably did find an actual bug. The challenge is that the environment that they're testing in is probably different than the environment that you're running on your developer desktop. And to kind of arrive at what the differences are between those two environments, you have to have a long, drawn-out conversation. You know, what build are you running? What version of browser are you running? What exactly did you click on? Are you sure you followed the right test case? And so by the time you go back and forth, oftentimes those bugs either get marked as no repro, or if you finally do fix them, you spend a lot of time going back and forth that gets wasted. And so those are the three challenges that we have that we tried to solve in 2010, the first of which is drive that quality lifecycle up front to where the developers are writing the code as close to that as possible. Number two, we want to give manual testers a great set of tools that they can use to be productive doing what they do. And number three, when they do find bugs, we want to be able to capture all that rich information automatically so that as a developer, we don't have to have this ping pong back and forth. We can ask the questions of, you know, what, you know, build were you running, and that should all be contained in the build. What was the event log? You know, that can all be contained in the build. And so I'll show you how we've addressed that with Microsoft Test Manager 2010, which of course is all those capabilities are there in Microsoft Test Manager 11. And then once we get through that, I'm going to show you the new capabilities we've added around exploratory testing and lab management. So this isn't a marketing talk, but I just wanted to set some context because it is a little confusing when you try to go find this thing called Microsoft Test Manager. Microsoft Test Manager is basically included in the Visual Studio Test Professional product or Visual Studio Ultimate. So think of Test Professional as the product you would get if you are a manual tester, and it integrates natively with Team Foundation Server and includes all the licensing you need to connect to Team Foundation Server. And then Visual Studio Ultimate, because that's kind of the premium SKU, we wanted to make sure that developers who had that product also had the ability to use those manual testing tools as well, so they can easily get in and edit test cases or connect to lab-managed environments if they want to. Okay. So with that, I want to drop into some demonstrations here. And as I mentioned, I am going to spend a few minutes taking you through some of our Microsoft Test Manager 2010 capabilities just to make sure everyone's on the same page. So this is the website that I'm testing here. I've shown these demos before. And so the idea is that with Microsoft Test Manager 2010, we really wanted to embrace a formal test case management approach. And so if you take a look at formal test case management, the idea is that you usually start with a requirement. You can call it whatever you want. Maybe it's a feature or a requirement, a user story. And then from that, you start writing your test cases based on how you would validate that requirement. So quite simply here, as an example, as a customer, I should be able to remove items from my shopping cart. And so here you can see I have a couple of positive and negative tests. So one is customers should be able to remove items from the shopping cart by clicking the X icon and entering invalid data in the cart. Like if I go into the quantity and say the letter A, that should not remove values, right? This is basic test case management. We've all seen some of this stuff before. And so to support that, I can go into this test case and you'll see where I've written the individual test steps that I want to perform. And then you can see I've just documented that so that when I switch over to my test tab and I go back to that requirement, you can see this is a test that I need to run. Now, you'll notice this test case shows up twice. That's because that's reflective of our test matrix. And so here we want to make sure that this works both on Windows Server 2008 and Windows 7. So this is just telling the tester that they need to test it twice. And this is really important because I'll show you later how you can set up lab-managed environments so that if you have configurations you need to test that are different than your own local workstation, you can easily run those tests over there. But for now, let me just go ahead and run these tests. I'll just run one example of this test here, show you what this looks like. Now what it's doing is it says it's initializing data diagnostic adapters. The idea is that, as you'll see in a minute, I can configure exactly what information I want to capture from the application under test as I'm running this application. And I'll show you the examples of what type of information you can collect. But right now I can just say start test, and Microsoft Test Runner is going to tell me all of the individual steps that I need to perform in order to run this test. So I could step through each one of these steps manually. The other really cool thing about this is that because I've already run this test once, we actually went in here and we captured all of the action recordings. And so the idea is, I know it's hard to see, but I'm highlighting those steps, and I can say play. And this is going to play back all of the actions I performed when I moved my mouse and clicked on a button, when I, you know, typed into a text box. It captures all of that and it plays it back, which makes it really nice for me as a tester. Imagine if I have, you know, a 30-step test case, which starts with create a new account, log in, add these 10 items to your shopping cart, and then what I'm really testing today is to make sure that the checkout logic works correctly. Well, now I can fast forward through the first 20 or 25 steps and then turn it over to the tester to take it the rest of the way. And so here, I just need to make sure that everything removed from my shopping cart, which it did, and I can go ahead and pass that. And then if I wanted to, I can keep playing through the rest of those steps. Okay? So that's just a quick look at formal test case management. Another one of my favorite features of Microsoft Test Manager that that I talked to a lot of people who are using it and they didn't know about is the ability to answer the question of, okay, I'm a manual tester and I ran, you know, 1,000 tests this week, right? And then there's a new build that comes in. How do I know what I need to go back and start testing about this new build? You know, I had, you know, 900 of my tests pass yesterday. Which ones may have broken today? So that's one question we want to answer. The other question is, what's new in this build? Is this build even worth me picking up and starting to look at? And this is a question which, again, results in a lot of traditional ping pong going back and forth between the tester and the developer, where the tester's trying to get information from the developer about what they checked in so they can start to answer those questions. Well, with Microsoft Test Manager, because it's all built in the Team Foundation server, we can answer all of those questions because the data already exists in Team Foundation server. So, for example, I can click on Assign Build, and it's going to give me a list of all the builds that I can choose from that came out of Team Build that match this particular project. And then down below, it tells me that in this particular build, a developer checked in some code, and they said this is to resolve this particular task. So something about writing regular expressions. Well, that doesn't really mean anything to me as a tester, so I'm not going to waste my time installing this build. But instead, maybe a couple hours go by, and another build comes out, and now I see that in addition to having that regular expression, we now have this user story. So if I open up that user story, I could say, aha, that's actually something that I'm interested in testing. I've written my test cases. I'm ready to test that. So now this build is maybe interesting for me to uninstall the previous build and switch over to the newer build. Then finally, if I switch over to the latest build, you can see that there's even another bug that's fixed in here as well. So this is really a build that's worth my time. So now I'm going to assign this to my plan, and that gives me some new things that I can go test, which maybe were blocking me before. But then the other question that I said I want to answer is, there's a bunch of tests that passed yesterday, and the developers are checking in some code. Well, what do I need to go retest? And we shipped some technology in 2010 called test impact analysis, which is really great stuff. The idea is that as you're running your tests, whether they're automated tests or manual tests, as you're running those tests, if you're testing .NET code, we can actually keep track of which DLLs, which classes, which methods are being executed every time you run a test. So if I ran test 58 yesterday, and it used these three classes and these two methods, and then the developer goes back and changes one of those methods, we then go back and say, okay, you might want to think about running test 58 again. And that can save me a lot of time. It doesn't mean that test 58 is going to fail, and it doesn't mean that the rest of the tests which don't show up as impacted are necessarily going to pass, because sometimes there's external dependencies, maybe some database code changed or something that we don't pick up as part of test impact analysis. But it at least helps me start my day where I say, I have an hour before lunch. What 10 test cases can I run that are going to give me the highest probability of finding a bug so I can quickly get that back to the development team? And so when I say assign this to my plan, it's now going to tell me that some of these tests I ran previously were impacted. I can say view recommended tests. And now it comes back and tells me that this test case 40 on each of these configurations was impacted. So I can reset that to active. And then when I return to my test tab, you can see that this is active, which basically tells the tester you should think about running this test again. Okay? Any questions there? That's everything I wanted to show you around 2010. And please, let's make this interactive. You guys were great in my session yesterday. Just keep asking those questions. It keeps it more entertaining for me as well. And we should have plenty of time to get through all the topics. So if you think of anything, if I don't see you, please throw something at me, shout out, whatever works for you. Okay, so I'm going to power down that virtual machine and get ready for, I told you I've got a bunch of builds running here, so just warm up my other VMs here. So that was formal test case management. Formal test case management is great, and I think that it's something that for the majority of applications I'm familiar with, you have to take place in, you know, have some level of formal test case management so that you can validate that you're you know, testing the right requirements and that the application does what it should and doesn't do the things that it shouldn't. But oftentimes, as testers, we like to just put on our testing hat and go break stuff. And there are hundreds of examples on the internet where you can find examples of how exploratory testing or how agile testing has found issues that you would have never caught using a formal test case management approach. And a gentleman named James Whitaker used to work on our product team. He helped design Microsoft Test Manager when he was at Microsoft. He's over at Google now, but he still does quite a bit of lecturing, and he's written a few books on exploratory testing. And he shows these really nice examples of how the Google Maps team was able to find all these bugs that you would never think about writing a formal test case for. And so as an example, I think it's somewhere in England, there was a footbridge. And if you typed in that I want to go from this village to this other village that was just on the other side of the footbridge, it should just be a 5-minute walk, you know, walk across the footbridge. But they didn't have that path programmed. And so instead, it basically had you walking around this entire lake and, you know, through a couple of other villages. And it was like a 9-day trek by the time you finally got to just right over there. And, you know, that's something that once you figure that out, you can say, okay, let's go write some test cases around that. But oftentimes, as someone writing test cases, those are the types of fringe cases that we don't always think about. And so we want to be able to embrace that agile or exploratory test paradigm as well. And so with Microsoft Test Manager 11, when you open that up, you can continue to write your formal test cases just like you could in Microsoft Test Manager 2010, but you can also switch over to this test tab, and you can say do exploratory testing. And the one of the criticisms of exploratory testing is that from a management perspective, let's say that you're a test lead and you have a bunch of people on your team that are doing exploratory testing, it can be very challenging to understand exactly what they're testing. How do I know when I'm done testing all these different capabilities? And then when they do find bugs, one of the traditional criticisms of exploratory testing is that they don't contain the right information so that a developer can fix the bug. And so if you imagine somebody that's doing exploratory testing, they might be sitting in sitting in front of the application for 2 hours, and they're clicking all over the place. What can I do if I type in a bunch of data into this text box and hit submit? Does that crash it? No, let me try this text box over here. And pretty soon you start to lose track of exactly what you did, and then you may find a bug, but you may not remember exactly what you did to reproduce that bug. And so in order to help address that, James Whitaker in his books, I should really get a commission because I think I sell more of his books than anything else. But in his books, he talks about the idea of doing these testing tours. And so if you think about maybe looking at a tour guide for going to Rome, for example, one of the tours might be to go take a look at, you know, the Colosseum and the Forum, and that might be one tour that you do. And another tour might be a back alley tour, which is, let me just take a look at all the different back alleys and see what kind of interesting shops I can find. Well, the idea with doing tours when it comes to exploratory testing is very similar. So we practice this at Microsoft where we say, okay, today we're just going to see if we can overload text boxes on all the forms, or let's look for any places that maybe have the wrong privacy policy posted to the bottom of the website, or let's just go see what happens if I am paranoid about privacy policy. So, you know, it's my first time using an e-commerce website and I just want to make sure that my credit card details are protected. Well, let me think about what a customer might go through when they're trying to make sure that all of the transactions are going to be secure and private and that sort of thing. So I'm sure you can imagine your own sets of tours that make sense for the applications that you write. And then sometimes you just want to put on your testing hat and go break stuff, right? And so you don't necessarily have a tour. And the way that we make that something that's actionable, something that management can actually track, is you can do exploratory testing along the lines of an individual user story or requirement. So I can say, you know, maybe one of these tours is to make sure that all the privacy policies show up on the web page. And I could select one of those, and when I start recording or when I start testing, it's then going to track all of my test session details against that particular test so that later on the management team can say, you know, did we do some exploratory testing in this area? Yes, we did. We feel good about that. Let's go on to the next set of areas. Or I'm just going to say, let me just do some random, you know, ad hoc exploratory testing without an individual scenario. And so same thing, this is Microsoft Test Manager 11, similar to what you saw before, only when I do exploratory testing, you'll notice that I don't have the individual test steps, because here it's up to me as a tester to use what I know about doing testing to kind of try to break the application. A couple things that we added here. One is you can actually capture audio recordings straight from within here. So as you're going through, you know, it can kind of be labor intensive to have to type all your notes. If you just want to say, hey, take a look at this, let me grab a screenshot and file that, then we'll capture all those audio recordings and store them straight for the developer. The other thing is we allow you to scope all that information, which I'll show you here. So if I start doing exploratory testing, at this point, the application is going to keep track of everything that I'm doing. So every click that I make, every time I type some text, every time I scroll my browser, it's keeping track of all that information in the background, and you'll see why that's important for an exploratory test in a couple of minutes. So I'm just clicking around. I'm going to try to get some activity in here. Pretend that I've been testing this application for 45 minutes or, you know, just going throughout my day trying to find some bugs. And maybe I go over to the delete page. And when I go to delete and I scroll down, you'll notice here that I found a bug. So we lost all of our assignment details around customer and created by. So I can say, you know, delete page is missing some values. We need to fix this. And I can grab a screenshot. And remember, if I wanted to, this could be video recordings that are taking place in the background, audio recordings. All that stuff gets captured for you automatically. And again, I'll show you a few the other things you can capture in a few minutes here. And so at this point, I have an option to create a bug. And of course, we want to fix this, so we'll create a bug here. Delete page is missing some values. And then the interesting thing here is that I have the option now to select which of my last, you know, 30, 40, 4,000 actions were relevant to this particular test case. And so now what I can do is come in here and scope this and say, you know what, the first few records I clicked on, they didn't really matter. But if I change these steps here, I can say maybe, you know, clicking on this particular link through this particular link, that's what was important. Let me select that. Now it's scoped those actions for this particular bug. And now when I file this bug to the developer, he's not going to be completely overwhelmed by looking at my two-hour testing session, right? And this is also going to scope those video recordings, audio recordings. All that stuff is going to get scoped down so that you're just focusing on what's important. So that's good. We found a bug, and that's one of the beauties of exploratory testing. But one of the criticisms of exploratory testing is we want to make sure that we now track and fix this moving forward. And if we regress this, we need to kind of switch into a formal test case management mode to make sure that we test this for future builds. And so now what I have the option of is I can either save this and move on to the next bug, or I can say, let me create a test case straight from here. And when I create this test case now, it's going to turn everything I just did into a set of test steps that I can now use from a formal test case management approach moving forward. So I'll just say for this test case, make sure delete page has all values. And then maybe I want to come down here and, you know, insert a new step, open Fabricam site, make sure all values look right. Do not delete. And for those of you that use Microsoft Test Manager today, 2010, you'll appreciate this is one of our top requests that people get excited about. It's a little thing, but it doesn't matter. I can do rich text editing. So that's fun. And then when I save that, I'm right back into my testing session. So I could keep testing. I could go on for, you know, 3, 4, 5 more hours finding bugs. When I'm finally done, then I could say in testing, all of that information is going to get saved as an exploratory testing session. So now, remember, my management has details about what it is that I just tested. If I wanted, I could come in here and file some notes. You can see here that all of my bugs are captured from a result of this exploratory testing session. I can take a look at my test cases. So you can start to answer some interesting questions later on to say, hey, every time we take a look at this particular tour, we seem to be finding a lot of bugs. Let me drill in and understand why that is. And so now I'll go ahead and save that. And of course, when we come back to the plan tab, you'll notice now that this is tracked as a formal test case moving forward. Okay? So that's how we're blending the best of both worlds there. We've got formal test case management on the one hand, exploratory testing on the other. And I'm really excited about this approach because I'm seeing a lot of excitement around exploratory testing, but I'm seeing a lot of teams that don't want to abandon their formal test case management approach as well. And so I think this gives you some tooling that allows you to kind of embrace both approaches. Okay? Any questions, comments? Still waking up? That's okay. I am too. The question is the test case versioning supported in this version? So what he's referring to is basically the idea of like test case baselining. That was a big question that a lot of people asked for in Microsoft Test Manager 2010. I will say we have a partial solution there. So what you can do is you can create a copy of a test case, and we'll do some better copying than we did in the 2010 version. I think by default we'll capture some of the action recordings that you have. And then you can move that to a new iteration. It's not quite what customers are asking for. That's something that's high on our backlog to do in hopefully Dev 12. So maybe the next time I come back, I can show you off a demo of that. But that is a story that I think that we have some work to do. So yeah, that's a great question. So now I'm going to switch over to lab management. There's a couple of more things that we did in Microsoft Test Manager 11. Let me just do some virtual machine grooming here. Couple more things that I didn't show you. Of course, I covered exploratory testing, rich text. Code coverage is now supported for manual tests in Microsoft Test Manager 11. And so if you use Visual Studio to write unit tests or other types of automated tests, you're familiar with code coverage already. The idea is that as I'm running my tests, I want to track on a per-line basis exactly which code was executed while I was running those tests. And so now you can combine this data from both your automated tests and your manual tests so that you can run a report later on that says, are there areas of my application that my test plan is not covering or hasn't covered recently and that I need to go back and make sure that I test? So it's not kind of a, you know, be-all, end-all for saying when your testing is done, but it is a nice metric to help you start to answer that question. Because if you look at your code and you realize there's 30% of your code, maybe some error handling code or particular branches that you're not checking because you forgot to check for cases where you're using international addresses to do your shipping or something like that, then this can start to answer those questions. And you can actually go back and look at that code coverage data, overlay that on top of your solution, and you can say, show me the code that hasn't been tested, so you can come up with a plan to make sure you test that. So that's something that I'm really excited about in 11. HTML5 is you know, obviously a rapidly evolving standard. We've done a lot of work now in Visual Studio 11 to support HTML5 from the test automation perspective. So we don't support 100% of what's available in HTML5 yet. So, for example, Canvas, that provides us some really tricky things to understand exactly what's happening within Canvas controls. But for video players and other, a lot of the other new HTML5 capabilities, you can take advantage of the test automation support to do things like write coded UI tests or to do things like partially automate your manual tests. So in the first example where I run my test case the first time and record my action recording and then I fast forward that later on to save myself some time, in that example I can start to work with HTML5 applications now as well. And Metro style. So with Metro style applications, we support test automation. We also support the ability for you to do manual testing. And if I had a Windows 8 tablet, I could actually wire that up over here and say, start my test case over on my desktop. And then I get my full screen Metro style application over here. And I can say, okay, I need to, open the application. I need to go to this, control. I need to type in this text. And what we're doing in the background is we're actually capturing all that rich data, including video recordings or what have you, on the tablet and sending that over to Microsoft Test Manager so that you can get the best of both worlds. I can see all my test steps and capture everything over here, but I get the full screen Metro style application on the tablet. And so that's very, very cool. If you're interested in that, there was a session by my colleague Matthew Anayan over at the Build Conference, which is available online that you can check out. And better lab management administration, which is what we'll be talking about next. But I think that is, like I mentioned earlier, something that's really interesting, whether you're doing automated testing or manual testing. So this is the set of slides that I would show in the past from 2010 whenever I wanted to talk about lab management. And so this is our 2010 story, and I'll show you how this has gotten simpler in Visual Studio 11. Out of interest, how many people are using lab management today? Okay, a few of you. Great. So any one of you I could pull up on stage, and you could probably tell your horrible stories of all the weekends you put into setting up your lab management rigs. It's one of the most valuable. He's nodding his head here. It's one of the most, I think, one of the most valuable sets of experiences that we enable within Team Foundation Server 2010. But it is very, very painful to set up your first time through. And the reason for that is the number of dependencies that we had to take on Windows Server plus Hyper-V plus System Center Virtual Machine Manager. And the entire stack there delivers a lot of value. So I can do things like I can say store a templatized version of my virtual machine into System Center Virtual Machine Manager so that I can say, hey, I need a new virtual machine that has SQL Server 2008 and another one that has IIS 7 on it and another one that's running a web client or something like that. And then in a matter of minutes, System Center Virtual Machine Manager does all the heavy lifting to say, okay, I have these 10 physical machines in my environment. Which ones have the right resources, memory, disk space, and so on? And then it can spin up all those virtual machines for you so that you immediately have a system that you can start using in your test environments. And so it's very, very cool, and we continue to support System Center Virtual Machine Manager in the new release. But sometimes you don't have the ability to do what these guys did, which is spend a few weekends pulling together this lab management environment. You just want to point it at a machine and say, hey, I'm running Windows 8 over here. I need to make sure my code works on Windows Server. What can I do to build it and quickly run my tests on Windows Server? And so we've given you this new ability I'll show you in just a second. And so when you set up a lab management workflow in 2010, it looks something like this. The first thing you do is you say, okay, I have some changes. I checked in this new code. So we're going to get that source, pull it into Team Build, which is our build automation solution and Team Foundation server. And then we're going to compile those projects and then push them down to a virtual environment that consists of one or more virtual machines. And so as I mentioned earlier, database server, web server, you know, a few web clients so I can do my tests across there, whatever the case may be. We're then going to deploy your application to a clean snapshot of that virtual environment. And then once it's deployed, you have the option of creating another snapshot that says, okay, let me just take the clean state of this environment and save it away. So at any time, I could say, you know, show me Friday night's build from 2 weeks ago before any of my tests have been run. And then we can automate running all of your automated tests. If there's a bug, then we can save a snapshot of that entire environment. And that's really nice as well. So if I happen to find a bug in an application today and I'm running on a physical machine and I walk over to a developer and say, hey, I just found a bug, they say, you know, all right, don't touch the machine until I can get over there. And so meanwhile, I'm going to lunch and trying to find something to do with my time until they look at my machine. Well, with a virtualization environment, we can just snapshot the entire state of that environment. And when that developer is ready to take a look at that bug, they just restore it. And they no longer have the excuse of, well, it works on my machine, because you're giving them an environment where it's definitely very broken. And so it's really nice for doing your automated testing and your manual testing. So the infrastructure required to support 2010, and I'm almost done with the 2010. We'll get into the fun stuff in a minute. But the infrastructure required to support 2010 lab management environment looks something like this. And so basically, we have Team Foundation server running at the core. We have three different other services that run. The test controller coordinates all the test execution and collects all the data from the individual test runs. The team build kind of automates the entire build and deployment workflow. So we take this source code and we compile it. And then on this machine, we install the database. On this machine, we install the application tier, whatever. And then System Center Virtual Machine is kind of, the virtual machine manager is responsible for that lowest level of spinning up those environments and hydrating them and dehydrating them and giving you the ability to snapshot. It also offers some nice capabilities around what's called network fencing. So if you want to replicate an environment that has the same IP addresses and same host names as your production servers, then this allows you to do that. So it's really nice for being able to do that. But the configuration of the individual environments was sometimes a pain. And so you had to install a test agent, a build agent, a lab agent, a VMM agent on all these different physical and virtual servers, or physical and virtual machines, in order to participate in this workflow. And then you had to wire them up to each one of the test controllers and build controllers and figure out firewall settings and shadow accounts. And it was really a pain. But now with Visual Studio 11, with lab management, you can set all this up in a matter of minutes, assuming my demo goes well. And it's going to, right, guys? I need happy thoughts. So what I have here is a server that is running Team Foundation server, and it has Microsoft Test Manager 11 running on it. And I have another machine over here, which is running Windows Server 2008 R2 with SQL Server 2008 R2. And so let's say that I wanted to take that machine and start running my tests on that machine. So it's a different configuration than what I run as my development workstation. And keep in mind, again, that could be a physical machine or it could be a virtual machine. It doesn't really matter. The exercise is the same here. I've actually already created an environment, which we'll use in just a minute, but I want to show you what it takes to add that other environment as a new environment that can participate in those workflows. And so the first thing that you'll notice up here at the top is that we have this new environment definition called a standard environment. And standard environments can do almost everything that the SCVMM managed environments could that I just showed you, with the exception of the snapshot and the restore capabilities. So if you wanted to use a virtual machine that was running on VMware, there's nothing preventing you from doing that. But if you wanted to, say, take a snapshot of that VMware environment once you've deployed all of your bits to it, that's something you would have to do manually by editing the build definition workflow. It's not difficult to do. We just don't do it out of the box for you. So I expect that right on the heels of shipping RTM, one of these guys is going to write a blog post, or I'll write a blog post that says how to get this working with VMware, and you can set that up to take advantage of snapshot and restore. But for our purposes, we've optimized around Hyper-V and SCVMM if you need that capability, and then if not, then standard environments are great for you. So I'll use a standard environment here. We'll call it Windows Server 2008 R2. R2, SQL 08, R2. I can give it a description if I wanted to. I could add tags as well. Tags are really nice so that if you wanted to create, say, multiple environments that all had different, you know, versions of SQL, or if you wanted to, say, have 10 different environments that all supported the same configuration, then that way the build workflow could say, show me an environment that is ready for me to send this to. So if you're in a continuous integration environment where you're checking in code all day and you just want to automate the deployment and the testing onto all those different environments, you want to make sure that you add additional environments that have the same configuration so that you don't find yourself getting kind of in the backlog of being able to check in code and then test all that code. So we won't set up tags here, but it's pretty easy to set that up if you want to. And then I'm going to add my machine either by IP address or the host name. And we'll just give this a role. We'll call it the web server. I'll give it the password of an account that has administrative privileges. And again, more tagging. I also have the option of doing what's called configuring this to run coded UI tests. So I gave a talk last year, which is on Channel 9, which takes you end-to-end through working with coded UI tests. Coded UI tests are a new test type we shipped in 2010 that allows you to create fully automated functional UI tests. And so the idea is that you want to simulate what a user is doing when they're in front of their mouse and keyboard, and you know, then you can add additional validation logic. But in order to make those tests run on these environments, you basically have to run as an interactive process, which gives the test service the ability to do the same things that a user would with the mouse and keyboard. And so if I wanted to set up coded UI tests, I just need to say which role within my environment those are going to run on. So going back to my 3-machine environment, I would run those on my web client in that configuration. Here I just have 1 machine, which is fine. And then I have my summary. And then I can validate that all these settings were right. So we'll see if I got the passwords right. Oh, I just need to give it a different name. That's the same name as my other environment. Okay. And then when I say finish, this is going to automate many of the steps that these guys spent their nights and weekends doing with 2010. So it's going to connect to that virtual machine. If the test agent is not already installed, it's going to install that test agent. It's going to install the build agent. It's going to install that lab agent. So all that stuff is getting automated for me. And it's also going to do the work to configure it as well. So which username does it need to run as, what firewall ports need to be open, which test controllers does it need to bind to. So all that stuff is happening for me. I'm not going to wait for this one, but it would take maybe about 10 minutes, and then we're good to go. And then we can start running our build, deploy, test workflows right against that environment. So I'll use my existing environment that I have here for the rest. So now that I have my environment set up, we want to set up the build, deploy, test workflow. And in order to do that, there's a couple of things that I want to do first in my test plan settings. Yeah, question? I'm sorry, can you start over? Something about Azure. Great question. Is it possible to do all this in Azure? We don't provide that support out of the box, but I've seen people do it. Is Clemens here? No, I don't see Clemens, but there's a guy locally that works for Sagetti that does a lot of this work, and he's blogged about this extensively, where you can go do just that. You can point it at Azure, and you can automate all these steps. He actually did that, if I'm not mistaken, with TFS 2010, so I would expect that process to get even easier with TFS 11. In the future, we would definitely like to provide some of that support out of the box for you, where imagine this just saying, where's your environment? It's in the cloud. What's your Azure credentials? And you just say, go, and we spin that up for you. You can scale it up and scale it down as needed. That's definitely where we went ahead, and we think there's a lot of value there. But right now, you would, if you're sufficiently motivated like these guys are, I'm sure you can get it set up, but it's not supported straight out of the box. Yeah, great question. Okay, so I have a set of tests that I want to run in this environment. In order to do that, I need to first set up my properties for my test plan. That was what I was about to do. And so here you can see I have what's called test settings. And so those of you that use MTM 2010 are familiar with test settings. The idea is that with test settings, this is where you define what information you're collecting on the individual test environment machines. And so here I can just say this is my Windows Server 2008 R2, SQL 08 R2 build deploy test workflow. That's a mouthful. You can say which roles are participating here. So here I only have one machine, but if I had multiple machines, we could collect different information across each one of those machines. So for example, I could come down and say, I want to capture the event log off of the SQL Server, and I know that on Windows Server 2008, the security is locked down, and so I want to actually capture all of the security events that run as part of that event log. And so what that means is from the time we start testing to the time we find potentially a bug, we're going to capture all that event log information so that if you later look at that bug, you have the details you need to drill in and understand exactly what might be going on that machine. Here's where I could turn on code coverage. IntelliTrace, if you're familiar with IntelliTrace that we shipped in 2010, you can capture that from any of the machines that are running managed code. You can turn on what's called network emulation. So you could say my web client, I need to see what that looks like when a customer is connected over a 56K connection. Does that cause a bunch of timeouts or anything that I should be aware of? Test impact data I talked about earlier for making sure that you figure out which tests you need to rerun every time you pick up a new build. Video recorder. So this is really interesting. We added the ability for you to capture audio, which might be might get into some interesting situations if you're doing this in your test labs and someone's having a private conversation and they walk by and you capture that on your test runs. But you can capture that if you want to. What may be more interesting here is this option that says save video recording even if the test passes. I've seen a lot of people use this in interesting ways. The idea is that even if a test fails, or sorry, even if a test passes, we can save that video recording back to TFS. And that's interesting if you have maybe a test firm that you outsource your testing to, and you want to go back and audit and make sure that they're running the correct tests. This is a great way to do that. The other thing that we started noticing internally at Microsoft is that we use this for ad hoc documentation. So, you know, we don't always generate new documentation with every single build, but occasionally I want to go back and say, hey, how did that feature change or how is this supposed to work? So I can go straight into Team Foundation Server. I can look for a particular feature or user story, and then I can drill into any recent test run data and say, show me any video recordings, and then I can get a quick sense for what's going on. And then the third thing that's really interesting is I can write the best test automation in the world and write a bunch of validation behind that, but I'm never going to be as effective as a human being when it comes to actually looking at the screen and pausing that video recording and saying, does everything look right when I'm running on Firefox under, you know, a Windows Server environment? And so those three different areas make it really interesting to capture video recording. The next question I always get is, how much space does that take up, you know, on your TFS server? And it's actually very efficient. In my tests, it depends on the application you're testing and how graphically intensive it is. But most of the time, I found that it's usually about a meg per minute of data, and we have a power tool that allows you to go back and clean up old test data to prune that out of Team Foundation Server. So I'll just finish that. And the other thing that I want to set up now is to add a new configuration to my test plan. So I mentioned I want to start testing for Windows Server 2008. So I'll add that. You can add whatever variables you want here. It doesn't have to even be operating systems. You could add a particular library you have a dependency on and different versions you want to test for of that library. But what this is going to do for me, if I go back to my plan contents, is this particular test case, I can now go into configurations, and I can say that I need to test this across multiple configurations. And so now when I go to the test tab, that's what causes it to have those two rows that show up. Okay? So you'll notice that this is an automated test. I'll show you how you get that automated test set up in just a minute. Most tests are probably going to start their life as a manual test. So if I come in here and say, you know, make sure customers can create a new account with a strong password, and I'll add a few steps down here. Whoops, wrong button. Open Fabricam site. Create new user with @user and @password. So what that does, if you haven't used Microsoft Test Manager, is it creates this data bound set of fields down here. So if I wanted to run this test multiple times for different values, I could easily do that. And when I write a coded UI test later on, it could also pick up those values as well, which is really nice because then your manual testers can add new values to that matrix straight from Microsoft Test Manager without having to know anything about writing coded UI tests. Okay. So I'm not actually going to run that test, but let's assume that I ran that test for a while as a manual test and everything's passing correctly, and I feel like it's time to turn this into an automated test. The UI is mostly stabilized around this feature, and I just want to create that as a test to surface any quick regressions that I might run into later on. And so to do that, I would come into Visual Studio, and I would write a coded UI test, or I could write a unit test to validate a piece of functionality. You can really write any test automation you want here. You could even wire up third-party tests by using what's called the generic test and pointing that at maybe a QuickTest Pro test that you want to run. Whatever it is that you can use to validate a particular test case can then be turned into test automation for you and then bound to that test case. So if I come into my work items and look at my test cases, there's my new test case. The other thing I need to do is I need to open up my solution where my tests are. And if you saw my talk yesterday, then you know that one of the cool things we did is we made all of our unit testing frameworks extensible, so I could be running in-unit tests, ex-unit tests. As long as I have the appropriate adapter in here, it's going to look across my solution and find any of those tests that match that particular pattern. And so I just come down here to test automation, associated automation tab. This tab, by the way, does not work in Microsoft Test Manager, so it's only read-only if you're in there. You actually have to switch over to Visual Studio, so a lot of people get confused by that, myself included, the first time I looked for this. And so now if I look at my tests, again, this is the list of all my test cases, or my test automation DLLs, so this could be a coded UI test. In this case, I just happen to be picking a unit test, which is fine. And then we'll save everything. So now if I go back to Microsoft Test Manager, and if I look at my test tab, you'll notice that I have this new test, which is automated. I need to also come in here, and since I didn't make that the default for my test plan, I just need to say that I want to run this as an additional configuration. What I should have done before I wrote that test is I should have just clicked here, and then any new test cases that I write moving forward would apply to both configurations. And sometimes you don't need to run it on every configuration. Like if you're running a test on a web client that's really just testing server functionality, you probably don't need to run it on IE versus Firefox if you know that the experience is going to be the same. So you could go in there and selectively say these tests only need to be run on one configuration. That's fine. So I've set up my test plan. I've set up my test cases. I've associated those with my DLLs that I want to run as part of that test automation. The next thing I need to do is set up my build deploy test workflow using team build. And so if I come into team build, and let me give this some more real estate, you'll notice I already have a build definition that's set up here. And if I look at this build definition, this is just building my solution. So if you've used Team Foundation build before, it's the same set of arguments that you would set up to just say build my solution. One of the things I'm going to do here is queue a new build. And I'm going to say don't run my tests because I'm running currently with this build. It's running some tests on the build server. But here I just want to run my tests over on the remote server. So I'll disable tests from here, and instead we'll run them as part of our lab-managed environment. So that just kicked off a build. I now need to create a new build definition which represents my build deploy test workflow. So this is Windows Server 08, SQL 08 R2, build deploy test. And I'll just make this manual. If you wanted to have this run every night or every hour, you could do that, or every check-in. If you had enough build environments to support that. And then that's the drop location. And this is where the interesting stuff happens. So most of the time when you're setting up a team build definition, you would use this default template to build your project. If you want to set up build deploy test workflows, you use what's called a lab default template. And the lab template is what's responsible for kicking off those build deploy test workflows. And this Ellipsis is where all the interesting stuff gets configured. So this is going to walk me through selecting which environment I want to use, which build I want to use, how I deploy my code, and ultimately which tests I want to run as well. And so here, if I select my environment that I had earlier, notice that I don't have the option to revert to a specific snapshot because I'm using a standard environment versus a System Center Virtual Machine Managed environment. So that is the trade-off. But for me, that's okay. I get to select which build I want to use. I could either queue a new build each time that's going to build my solution on my project and everything. I just created a new build, so I'm just going to use the latest there. And then this is where I define exactly what I need to do to deploy all of my code. And so we don't do anything special here. Whatever you do currently to run your code or deploy your code, whether that's running a SQL script on the database and then doing an xcopy or web deploy, whatever you do there can be automated here just sequentially by typing in whatever batch files or whatever xcopy commands you need to run. And so here, I'm not actually going to deploy the code in the interest of time. I'll just run a command. Just do a directory. So it's going to run some query the directory and then output that to my build script. So it's not actually deploying anything. And then I need to say which environment I'm going to be pushing this out to, or sorry, which test configuration, so that it stores the results appropriately over in my test plan. So that looks good. We can save that. And now what I can do is kick off a new build deploy test workflow. And for those of you that use Team Foundation build today, you'll like some of what we did here around the UI. The UI is much nicer for looking at your build definitions and being able to see exactly how that status is running. In fact, what I'll show you here in Team Web Access is that you can actually take a look at the exact same status of your builds over in Team Web Access. And you can even queue a new build from Team Web Access as well. So that's really nice if you say, hey, we just need to quickly kick off a new test. I could open up the build definition and queue a new build straight from the web layer. And so here you can see the status, everything it's doing. There's my directory command in place of actually deploying anything. But whatever your deployment script was, all that output would show up as part of your build script here. We should be done in just a couple more seconds. And it's done. So what it did is it ran through that entire workflow over on my remote environment, and it ran a couple of my tests. So if I take a look at these tests, you can see these are the test results that ran, and I can see exactly which tests ran down here. If I take a look at one of those individual tests, I can look at the results for that specific test and any specific attachments that it may have as well. So this is where I would find, for example, the screen capture that ran as part of that. And so I could take a look at that and see exactly how the test stepped through. So that's a nice way for you to audit as a tester. I can go back and say, okay, it passed, but did it actually do what I wanted it to do? So you can watch exactly if it was a coded UI test, exactly what was running. The other thing that sometimes you find as a tester is you get in here and you see that all your tests failed. But then you go look at the environment and you realize that the database wasn't started or had a network error, right? And so maybe you want to go fix that and then rerun those tests. And so you can just come down here and say rerun those tests, and that could actually update the test results for you. Or the other thing that you could do is you could come back to your test tab and notice that my test results showed up down here for my Windows Server 2008 configuration. But if I wanted to, say, run one of those tests manually, then I could say run with options. And I could say that I wanted to run all these tests manually, which would then open up the Microsoft Test Runner and then show me basically a terminal services session that allows me to connect to that remote environment and run those tests and still capture the same level of information that I was used to capturing before. So that's a really nice thing when your test automation breaks, maybe because the UI just changed or something fundamental about the workflow changed. But you as a manual tester know how it should work, so let me just get in there and see if I can test it and make it work. Okay? So is that cool? Is that interesting? Is that something you guys think you might be able to use? I know you guys are happy down here. Yeah?
Is it possible to import test cases, for example, from an Excel spreadsheet directly into Microsoft Test Manager?
Yeah, great question. So he's asking if it's possible to import test cases from Excel or some other data source. Yes, there is a tool that's available. I think it's either on CodePlex or Visual Studio Gallery called TCM Import, Test Case Management Import. And that allows you to point to Excel, or I think we support Word documents now as well, and you can just pull over all those test cases straight into Team Foundation Server. And that works in 2010 or TFS 11 as well. So yeah, great question. We also have some integration options with some of the HP tooling, the old Mercury tooling. So if you need to integrate with some of those solutions, we have a bunch of information online, or you can send me an email and I can point you at that. Okay. So that concludes my demo. I hope that gives you a quick sense of some of the ways you might be able to benefit from this. This is gentleman I usually refer to as the grandfather of Team Foundation Server. Of course, he has no idea that he was the grandfather of Team Foundation Server, but I think if he was alive today, he would have invented TFS for doing software development. This is Lord Kelvin. Of course, we know him for inventing the Kelvin scale, and he was always quoted as saying, you can't manage something unless you can measure it. And so that's why measurement is really important. And if you think about software development as being a really complex set of activities that we engage in every day, there are a lot of basic questions that we try to answer. Are we on track to finish this feature before the end of the milestone? How well tested is that feature? What are the impediments that are going to prevent us from being successful by the end of the release? And so I always like to show just a few of the reports that ship with Team Foundation Server that can help answer those questions. Because remember, Team Foundation Server, it's not just a source control solution. It's not just a work tracking solution. It's not just a build or a test case management or requirements management solution, but we intentionally built it to track all of those things so that we get that end-to-end traceability and we can start answering some of those interesting questions. And so this is a report that you get in TFS 2010 that I usually call the Steven Sinofsky report. And Steven Sinofsky, as you know, he's running the Windows team now. He used to run the Office team. The reason I call it the Steven Sinofsky report is that the Windows 7 and Office 14 teams actually built those technologies using an early version of Team Foundation Server 2010. And what they were able to do is track all of their high-level features and other requirements in there, and then track that from the high-level feature to the implementation, so how much code has actually been written for this feature based on a roll-up of all the tasks and their completion status and the number of hours remaining and that sort of thing. And then as Steven Sinofsky, I can say, okay, this is a feature that I really care about. I see that it's 80% done, which makes me feel good about it. But if I then look at the test results, maybe we don't have any tests to actually give me confidence that it's really a high-quality feature. So that, I mean, 80% done of a feature that doesn't work is 0% done, in my opinion. And so this gives you, at a management level, a really nice insight into not only the work that's being done, but also the quality as well. And here's a couple more. I'm not going to go through all of these. They're in my slide deck that you can walk through. Sam Guggenheimer on our team has also written a few really good books about software testing and tracking software quality. So the first book he wrote is Software Engineering with Visual Studio Team System. It's back from 2005, but a lot of those reports are the same types of things that I'm showing you here. And then he just wrote another one with Nino, who's one of the local MVPs. And that one's all focused around the latest version of TFS as well. So I highly recommend those books. Again, I need to get a commission. This is code churn and code coverage. Again, all this data can now be aggregated across your automated tests as well as your manual tests in TFS 11. This is an interesting report because it shows the importance of having multiple perspectives into your data. So if I just look at this task burndown, and that's the only report that I have to go off of, then I'm feeling pretty good about my project. You know, I don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that the line should go like this, and that's kind of what our line is going like. So we're burning down the right number of hours to be done with the implementation by the end of the release iteration. The problem with that is if you look down here at this other report, you see the user story progress. Almost all of our user stories are still active. And so what that tells me as a manager is that I have coders who are doing a little bit of work over here, maybe a little bit of work over here, and they're not actually finishing out any user stories that can be handed off to QA for that complete end-to-end testing or handed off to the stakeholders to do their acceptance testing. And so this is a red flag that I can find out about now before we get to the end of the iteration and realize that we just checked in all the code that finishes those features and we don't have time to test them. Okay? So these are just a few of the things that I really like. Of course, this is a SharePoint dashboard. It can be customized. You can pull in all these web parts using SharePoint Server and create your own custom dashboards, maybe one that's customized for the CIO so that she can always see exactly what projects are going on across the development organization. And all this data, you know, it's stored in the back-end SQL Server data warehouse, so you can start doing some interesting analysis of that as well and even create your own reports. So that's it. I'm down to 3 minutes. If anyone has any other questions, of course, I'll stick around the rest of the day as well. Yeah?
How easy it is to limit access to, for example, dashboards using TFS portal?
How easy is it to limit access to dashboards using the TFS portal? So there's two permissions you set up. One is the SharePoint permissions, and the other is SQL Server Reporting Services permissions. So are you afraid of your CIO seeing the work that you're doing? Is that why? So yeah, you can easily go in there and customize and say who should get access at any kind of, you know, in TFS style, you know, permission level. Yeah, there's two places. If you want to set up the dashboards permissions, there's two places you usually do that. One is by going into SharePoint and making sure the user has access or doesn't have access to your project portal. And the other one is for SQL Server Reporting Services. So if you want to use those integrated dashboard reports, you have to set it up in two places. If you just want to, for example, yesterday I showed PowerPoint storyboarding and how you would store those in SharePoint. If you just want to give your stakeholders access to shared documents, you just set it up in SharePoint, and then you don't have to worry about the reports for them necessarily. So yeah, good question. Okay, well, once again, thanks for having me. I love this conference. I hope that you realize I'm sincere when I say this is my favorite conference that I get to come to every year, just because you guys are so nice. You ask such great questions. You're so engaged. So it really is an honor. Thank you to Gerard for having me every year, and I hope to see you again in the future. Thank you.